Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Save big money in your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect finish for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and get your painting project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Everyone asks the same question about Eric Richens, the deceased husband of Corey Richens, that thing back there. The second they hear the details of the case, the same five words show up in every comment section, every group chat, every conversation, at every kitchen table where someone is catching up on what happened in Park City, Utah. Why didn't he just leave? It's the wrong question. And it's the wrong question in a way that matters, because asking it assumes that leaving was the safe choice and staying was the dangerous one. For Eric Richens, that math, the math, it ran the other direction. He didn't stay because he was blind to what Corey was. He stayed because he saw it clearly, more clearly than the friends around him, more clearly than the systems that were supposed to help him. And he concluded that leaving would put his kids closer to the danger, not further from it. He wasn't a man who didn't see the fire. He was a man standing between the fire and his three boys, convinced that if he stepped away, the fire would reach them. That calculation is what the story is really about. Not what Corey did. What it was like to live inside the world she built, to see it for what it was, and to decide that the safest place to stand was still inside of it to protect his kids. Before we can understand why Eric stayed, we have to understand what happens inside a person who's holding two completely incompatible truths at the same time. On one side, the person is trying to kill me. On the other, this is my wife, the mother of my children, the person sitting across from me at breakfast, the other half of the carpool. Your brain is not built to carry both of those at full volume. One of them has to get turned down. And inside a marriage, inside a home with three young boys, inside a life that still looks like a life to everyone on the outside, the threat is almost always the one that gets quieter. Not because you forgot, because you can't really function if you don't. As we go through this, if you've been in a situation like this, male, female, whatever it may be, if you had a monster like Corey in your life, a narcissistic, sociopathic, cluster B monster like Corey Richens, in my opinion, share your story. A lot of people are finding community within this and going, this hits home. I'm not alone. Because you're not. I've survived it. Many other people have survived it as well. And there is life out there. You do not have to stay in this situation. And you also don't have to end up dead by a Moscow mule in your bedroom. But let's understand Let's understand how he ended up on the floor of that bedroom, overdosed with fentanyl by his loving wife, Corey, and why he chose to stay. Greece, in this case, is the first evidence. Years before Eric died, the couple took a trip overseas. Corey gave Eric a drink. He became violently ill. Ill enough to pick up the phone and call his sister from another country and say the words out loud, "I think my wife just tried to kill me." That sentence spoken to family with a clarity that only comes from genuine fear. And then he came home. They resumed. Years passed. That phone call didn't disappear from Eric's memory, but it got reclassified. A bad night on vacation, a scare that didn't repeat, because the alternative, that the woman raising your children just tried to end your life, is something the brain will fight long before it accepts. It wasn't weakness. It was the only way to keep getting up in the morning inside a situation he hadn't yet left. Then came Valentine's Day of 2022, and whatever wall Eric had built between those two versions of his life cracked in a way the rest of us can actually see. Corey left Eric his favorite sandwich from a local diner, handwritten note, a Valentine's gesture, supposedly. He took one bite and his body went into revolt, hives, throat closing. Grabbed his son's EpiPen, took some Benadryl, passed out for several hours. When he woke up, he texted Corey that he wasn't feeling well, that he might need to go to the hospital. She told him to take a nap. The woman who just left the sandwich that did that. After he recovered, he called two friends. And here's where it gets important, not because of what happened, but because of the two completely different stories Eric told about the exact same event. One friend, Allie Staking, later testified that Eric described the sandwich incident almost like a funny story. An allergic reaction, something they were laughing about together. His other friend, Josh Kreis, got a completely different call. Kreis testified that Eric was somber, serious. And Eric's business partner, Cody Wright, said he could hear fear in Eric's voice. Eric told the last one of these people directly, or at least one of these people directly, he thought his wife was trying to poison him. Same event, same man, same afternoon. Two entirely different versions of reality, both coming out of the same mouth, and neither one was a lie. Eric wasn't performing for staking. He wasn't being dishonest when he laughed about it. He was accessing the version of his life where things are still okay, where a sandwich is just a sandwich that made him sick, where his marriage is rocky but survivable. When he called Kreis and Wright with fear in his voice, he was in the other version, the one where he'd done the math and the numbers didn't come out in his favor. That's what living inside sustained danger in a home does to a person. It makes you fluent in two languages. One is for the world where your life is still your life. One is for the world where it isn't. And the reason the normal version keeps muscling its way to the front is because the alternative, spending every waking minute in the reality where the person next to you in bed is trying to end you, isn't something a human being can sustain. You can't function there. You can't coach your son's games, run a masonry business, do the things a life is made of while carrying the full weight of what you believe is happening. So the brain toggles. It lets you be terrified on the phone with the friend who can handle it, and it lets you laugh about it with the friend who can't. And that toggle doesn't just help you get through the day, it helps you stay. Because the normal half keeps whispering that maybe the scared half got it wrong. Maybe Greece was just a bad drink. Maybe the sandwich was just a sandwich. Maybe. But Eric didn't ride the split passively. He acted. And what he did next is the part that breaks the "why didn't he leave?" question into pieces, because Eric did everything a person in his position is supposed to do, short of walking out the door. His brother-in-law, Clint Benson, helped him find a divorce attorney. Christina Miller, who testified at trial, sat down with Eric to talk through what a divorce would look like, how to protect his finances, custody. The meeting happened separately. Eric worked with an estate planning attorney to rewrite his will. He formed the Eric Richens Living Trust and put everything under his sister, Katie Richen Benson's control for the benefit of his three sons. He changed his power of attorney. He moved his life insurance beneficiary from Corey to Katie. Every single step done in secret. Corey had no idea any of it had happened. So here's a man who called his sister from Greece years ago and said his wife tried to kill him, who nearly died eating a sandwich on Valentine's Day, who told at least two family members he believed Corey would kill him for money and wanted to make sure the kids were financially taken care of, who told his family directly, if anything happens to me, she's to blame, who hired a divorce attorney, who rewrote his will, who restructured his entire estate to keep it away from the person he feared most, and who still went home every night, still slept in that house, still ate the food and drank the drinks. The part most people miss, preparation can become a substitute for departure. Every move Eric made, the attorney, the trust, the will, gave him something the brain craves when it is trapped. A sense that you're doing something. Ever been in a situation, a high-stress situation? Drama comes into your life unexpectedly, and you find the only thing you can do to deal is keeping yourself distracted in some way, shape, or form. Maybe cleaning the house compulsively. Going through your clothes. Getting into the old storage unit and emptying it out. It makes you feel productive. It makes you feel like you're getting somewhere outside of where you are currently trapped. A sense that you're doing something, handling it, building a plan. That feeling of forward motion is real. But it can actually push the exit further away when you're checking boxes. Met with the lawyer, changing the beneficiary, restructuring the estate. Your brain registers progress. It says we're moving. We're getting somewhere. And that feeling of momentum can keep the one action that would actually change your safety, leaving, always on the horizon instead of on today's list. The preparation starts to feel like the thing. The plan becomes a replacement for the act. I say it from experience. I've been there. I've done that. It gives you a little bit of respite, a moment of relief when you're sitting there, okay, if this happens or if something happens, here's how we can handle it. But again, you're missing the trees before the forest sometimes. And then look at what Eric actually protected, the money, the business, the life insurance, the boy's financial future. He built a wall around everything Corey would try to take after he was gone. He didn't build a wall around himself. That's not an oversight. That's a tell. At some point, Eric stopped planning how to get out and started planning what would happen when he didn't. The threat had been in the house so long it stopped being an emergency and started being weather. You don't prevent weather, you prepare for it. And that shift from I need to escape to I need to make sure the kids are covered when this catches up to me, that's the clearest evidence of what sustained danger does when it lives in your home long enough. Your own death stops being something to prevent and becomes something to manage around. And those who have been there probably don't even realize that's what one was doing. Because in the moment, you're not thinking that. It's hindsight and a retrospective look at it that makes that little fact shimmer in the light. But Eric's decision to stay wasn't rooted in denial or exhaustion or even the slow weight of having lived with this too long. The real reason is worse. And it's in the testimony his sister Katie gave at sentencing. Katie said she begged Eric to leave. His sister Amy said the same thing. He had the attorney, he had the legal groundwork, he had his family ready to catch him. He could have gone. And Eric told Katie he had already talked to the divorce attorney, that he was deeply afraid he wouldn't get sole custody, that he had made what Katie called the heartbreaking decision to stay because he could not accept the risk of what might happen to his sons if Corey had equal custody. He told his sister he would live his life through hell every single day until his youngest was 18. Because he believed Corey was the most evil person he had ever met. That's not a man in denial. That's a man who did the cost-benefit analysis of his own life and decided his safety was the variable he was willing to give up because he was a good father. He believed, and a jury would eventually confirm, that Corey was dangerous. But family courts don't convict people of future crimes. Eric couldn't prove what he knew. He couldn't walk into a courtroom and say, my wife is going to kill me, potentially the children too, and have that turn into sole custody. And the thought of his boys spending weeks, holidays, unsupervised weeks with the person he believed was capable of anything? That was a price he would not pay. Not even with his own life. And there are plenty of parents out there watching right now that know exactly what I'm talking about. His identity as a father, as a protector, as the one who held everything together, that identity was both the most admirable thing about him and the thing that kept him in reach. Being the buffer between Corey and the boys meant staying close enough for Corey to get to him. The protector role didn't have a version where the protector left the room as long as Eric was in the house. He believed he was the safety system, the barrier between her and them. If he walked out, the barrier walked out with him. That logic made sense to Eric. It would make sense to a lot of people listening. And it was the exact logic that kept him in the position for the night of March 3rd when Corey handed him a Moscow mule to celebrate a property deal and he drank it. And you know, we can't see into the future. We can't see where this path might have gone. Should Eric have said, enough. Kids, you get to take your chances with her. I got you half the time. She's got you half the time. I can't change it. It's what the law says. But I'm out. He didn't do that because he's a loving dad, because he cares to protect. And Eric knew something about Corey that no one else did yet. That she's a killer. That she had the potential to do this kind of violence. And he was right. He was dead right. And he paid for it with his life. And he stood between her and the kids. And that was the cost. But who's dead today? It ain't the kids. It's Eric. If Eric had walked away, who would be alive today? Would those three boys be? I think that's a big if. Corey likes to hurt other people. Corey only finds validity in breathing by making her scarlet mark on all those who come in her path. I think it's a real big if that her children would still be alive, all of them still be alive, if Eric had walked away. Eric's calculation may have been exactly right. He unfortunately paid for it with his life. In doing so, he did protect his children. All while trying to navigate a system that has a real hard problem. Identifying dangerous people, dangerous control, and dangerous ideas until it's far too late. He stayed with her because the system wouldn't allow him to walk away and keep his children safe. Eric wasn't the only person living inside the world Corey Richens built. Everyone around him was processing the situation through the same broken lens. The friend who heard the Valentine's Day sandwich story is comedy. The defense attorney who told 48 Hours that Eric and Corey were probably at the best place they had ever been with their marriage and seemingly genuinely happy. The family who knew everything, begged him to leave and couldn't physically remove a grown man from his own house when he said no. The courts, they don't have a category for my spouse is trying to kill me, but hasn't succeeded yet, so I can't prove it. Nobody around Eric was negligent. The situation was just so far outside anything they had a framework for. When your friend tells you he had a bad reaction to a sandwich, you don't call the police. When your brother says he's afraid of his wife but won't leave because of the kids, you tell him to leave. And when he doesn't, you don't have a next move. The people who loved Eric the most could see the room he was in. They just couldn't pull him out of it. But the room actually felt like from the inside, not from Eric's side, but from the boys who were living in it, didn't come out until sentencing. And it's a piece that reframes everything. One of Eric and Corey's sons recalled the night his father died. He was put to bed early without a bath, which apparently wasn't normal. When he tried to go to his parents' bedroom, his mother yelled at him to go away. He later told investigators that his mother didn't sleep in his room that night, directly contradicting what Corey told police. A child catching the cracks in his mother's story in real time on the night he lost his father. At sentencing, all three boys said they'd be afraid if Corey were ever released. One son, now 13, said he was afraid she'd come after him and his brothers, that she'd not do good things to us, like hurt us. Another said he feels hateful and ashamed when people talk about his mother because she took away his dad. The youngest said that once she's gone, he'll feel happy, safer, relaxed, and trust more people. And then one of the boys said this, I miss my dad, but I do not miss how my life used to be. I don't miss Corey. Eric stayed in that house to protect his children from the damage Corey would do with unsupervised custody. He believed his presence was the buffer. He believed he was the safety net. And in his children's own words, spoken to a judge after all of it was over, tell you what the environment actually felt like while Eric was fighting to hold it together. They don't miss how life used to be. They feel safer now with their father dead and their mother behind bars. And they did, or then they did, when both parents were in the house. The normal Eric was trying to preserve wasn't protecting anyone. It was the thing they all needed to be rescued from. Corey Richens didn't just take Eric's life. She built a world where the person who saw her most clearly was the person least able to escape. That world, the one where danger became weather, where fear and laughter lived in the same afternoon, where a man restructured his will instead of packing a bag because leaving felt more dangerous than staying. That world is the real crime scene, and the boys Eric gave everything to protect had to lose their father before anyone could pull them out of it. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. And if you have a story of survival, we'd love to hear it as well. We'll continue the conversation there. The links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe if you're finding our reporting valuable. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.